be able to play another music today because the computer one is completely frozen right now. So I'll be just playing with the Western Lacrosse Association. Okay. Now I'd like to provide updates on the Western Lacrosse Association at this time. It is a senior eight box amateur league sanctioned by the Canadian Lacrosse Association, with many of its players competing in the National Lacrosse League, which is spread throughout North America in winters. Game 6 of the 2026 WLA Finals was on August 25th, with the Coquitlam Maniacs hosting the Victoria Shamrocks at Puree Sports Center, with a chance to clinch at home with a 3-2 lead. And the hosts bested the regular season champs 8-7, led by Christian Del Bianco with 33 saves on 40 shots and 59-45 of play, followed by Matthew Gother. I think it's Matthew Gaucher. Just a minute, please. Sorry, today's just an absolute circus today because for some reason the computer one is completely frozen while on air. Like, I cannot believe this. Just a minute. Okay. Just a minute, please. I just want to get the name right. Come on, just a minute, please. It was Matthew Gaucher. 3 goals, 2 assists, 5 points in the losing effort for the second star. And Keen Moon with 2 goals and 2 assists for the third star for the clincher, as Chris Oglieri surrendered 8 goals and 43 shots and 58-57 of play for Victoria, as Coquitlam won the 2026 crown, and the 80X will play for the Man Cup against the Ontario Champions. Let me play a PSA before I get back. I'm not really sure where I can. Just a minute, please. I'll just try to play a PSA right now. Actually, I will try to play my next segment, which is my interview with Dylan Kruger, a Delta City Councilor who is running to become the next mayor of Delta.
Hello, it's Steve Chong. Today is August 26, 2026, and on the line is
Dylan Kruger from Delta City Council.
Dylan Kruger is a 2-time Delta City Councilor, originally elected in 2018. On top of being a Delta City Councilor, Dylan has multiple municipal appointments, including as a council liaison for the Ladner Business, Tawson Business Improvement Associations, and the vice chair for the Metro Vancouver George Massey Crossing Task Force, as the 4-lane 67-year-old tunnel connects Northwest Delta, the Ladner neighborhood, to Richmond's Steepson. Councillor Kruger is also running to become the next Delta mayor, trying to unseat the incumbent George Harvey as part of the One Delta Party. Dylan, thanks for the interview today.
Steve, thank you for having me.
I would like to provide history on the Massey Tunnel replacement to my listeners for context. The Massey Tunnel replacement project has been a long controversy, with the 10-lane bridge replacement announced on September 20, 2013, by the former BC Liberal Premier Christy Clark, but the Richmond Mayor Malcolm Brody and the rest of the Richmond City Council opposed, or most of it. Plans for the 10-lane bridge were revealed on December 16, 2015, which the former Delta Mayor Louis Jackson applauded. But Malcolm Brody and the former Vancouver Mayor Gregor Robertson, now the Federal Housing Minister, balked at the 10-lane Massey Bridge, which would have been tolled, due to more vehicles getting into Richmond and Vancouver. On March 31, 2016, the Richmond Chamber of Commerce announced their support for the 10-lane bridge, but Metro Vancouver mayors rejected the 10-lane Massey Bridge. 3 months later, on June 29th, except the former Delta Mayor Louis Jackson, who vigorously opposed the rejection, citing a possible extension of the Canada Line. On July 24, 2017, the Richmond City Council voted 8-1 to ask the new BC NDP provincial government to cancel the 10-lane bridge replacement for alternatives. On September 6, 2017, the BC NDP put a hold on the idea for an independent review, to which Richmond applauded, despite $66 million already being spent on the 10-lane bridge project, citing a resistance to future port development up the Fraser River by restricting long-haul ships and no visual impact to Richmond. While the Delta Mayor George Harvey originally supported the 10-lane bridge after getting elected in 2018, he ultimately walked the support back in October 2019 after concerns on the light and shade that a bridge would have posed, and concerns from Marina Garden Estate residents in the northern tip of Ladner. An 8-lane tunnel to replace the current Massey Tunnel was endorsed by Metro Vancouver mayors on October 2nd, November 1st, 2019, and the BC government, still run by the NDP, ultimately chose a toll-free 8-lane tunnel over an 8-lane bridge on August 18, 2021, with the design-build contractor, the Cross Fraser Partnership, a five-team consortium chosen on July 23, 2024. However, the Massey Tunnel replacement project has been marred with multiple delays as congestions in the current 67-year-old Massey Tunnel have worsened, and some have suggested had the original 10-lane bridge replacement gone ahead at an estimated cost of $3.5 billion, with the lowest bid coming in at $2.6 billion, it would have been completed by now. Meanwhile, while the original price tag for the Massey Tunnel 2 was $4.15 billion, with the completion date in 2030, there have been bombshell updates against the Massey Tunnel 2 in 2026. The BC NDP government fired the Cross Fraser Partnership on June 15th in favor of splitting the contract into smaller parts, restarting the competitive process. On July 2nd, the federal Liberal government announced that it will fund up to $3 billion in construction costs, and the BC NDP government, the provincial government, provided an update on the cost estimate on July 6th, which ballooned to $8.5 billion, with fears of the final price tag jumping to $12 billion per South Delta MLA Ian Patton. As the actual tunnel construction has been now delayed to 2027, with the completion date in 2031. First of all, I understand that you are a staunch supporter of the Massey Bridge. What option does most of the Delta City Council support at this time?
Well, most of City Council, with the exception of Mayor George Harvey, continue to be in favor of a bridge. Delta was steadfast, as you referenced, throughout all of the planning processes, through multiple successions of council, that a bridge project could be completed cheaper, quicker, and with less impact on the environment.
However, Mayor George Harvey also expressed concerns of the Massey Tunnel 2 ballooning up in cost a couple months ago.
Well, and that's ironic because Mayor George Harvey is to blame for all of these costs and escalations. Mayor George Harvey's had more positions on the tunnel than I can count over the last 8 years. He campaigned in favor of a bridge in 2018, and then once he became the mayor, he went to Metro Vancouver and voted against the bridge concept and in favor of an 8-lane tunnel concept along with Mayor Malcolm Brody. Now he complains about the tunnel and says we should have built built a bridge. It's just ridiculous, Steve. You know, these mayors who are not engineers, you know, getting in the way here. And the former premier, John Horgan, was very clear. If the mayor of Delta doesn't want a bridge, why would I build it? So unfortunately, we've had a real lack of leadership at the local level here at the city of Delta, which has contributed to our lack of ability to get this crossing built.
That answered my second question on your opinion on the mayor, George Mayer's multiple flip-flops.
Yes, there have been many.
I would like to ask you multiple counter questions against the Massey Bridge at this time.
Sure.
While the BC NDP ultimately canceled the bridge plan, the opposition from most Metro Vancouver mayors and Richmond City Council couldn't be ignored either. When I interviewed the Richmond City Councilor, Carol Day, back on August 13th, she listed multiple concerns of the 10-lane bridge. Silty, sandy soil conditions around the tunnel, along with liquefaction on the Richmond side where the towers were supposed to be built at 200 meters tall. Counter.
Well, both of those have long been debunked. That was fake news that was being spun by Carol Day in Richmond and Vicky Huntington in Delta 10 years ago, after the bridge project was announced in 2013. Simply not the case. The bridge project was well on its way to completion. $100 million had already been spent. A design had been finalized. Pre-construction works had begun. And that bridge would have been completed 3 years ago, had it not been for the flip-flopping of the mayors and the BC government. So the points by Councillor Day are simply incorrect.
I will delve deeper into her concerns later on. Here are my concerns of the Massey Tunnel 2. According to the BC NDP government, the Massey Tunnel 2 will be an 8-lane twin tunnel, which will be 1.054 kilometers long, according to a media outlet, just 40 meters from the existing tunnel, which will be built with six tunnel elements weighing 60,000 tons each at a dimension of 130 times 45 meters and sinking the elements under the Fraser River by immersion along with a new Dease Bridge. But Carol Day countered issues with the Massey Bridge, 3.3 kilometers long at 200 meters high, 660 meters span, with that being an environmental concern, the longest bridge in BC's history, the longest cable bridge in North America being subject to ice bombs, impacts on infrastructure, lack of integrations with transportation network, the tower's impacts on salmon, birds, and downloading major costs to municipalities, along with waiting, saving money with the federal government promising $3 billion. One more. And suggested people to take BC Rapid buses instead of driving, which connect to SkyTrain on River Rock Casino, in front of River Rock Casino, and head to Vancouver. Counter.
Well, I have to say it's very insulting to the 100,000 commuters a day stuck in traffic and endless gridlock at the tunnel to tell them to just get on the bus. Many commuters are unable to do that, and of course many of our commuters are small business owners and trades operators carrying equipment and supplies with them on either side of the tunnel trying to get to their final destination. So to tell those people to simply take the bus, I think, is a very out-of-touch statement. As to the environmental concerns, once again, the environmental damage of a submerged tube tunnel on the sensitive Fraser River estuary is significantly greater than any impacts the bridge would have had. The bridge would have had pedestals on land on either side of the water. None of those pedestals would have interacted with the sensitive Fraser River estuary. Instead, as you noted, we'll be taking six tunnel segments, each the size of a football field, and plunking them one at a time in the middle of a river that is full of salmon, sturgeon, and other creatures. In addition to that, unlike the bridge, these tunnel segments have to be built on dry land before being barged over to the Fraser River. So to do that, the province has deforested Metro Vancouver's Dease Island Park. They have removed thousands and thousands of trees. They are also preparing to pave over dozens of acres of farmland on both the Delta and the Richmond side of the tunnel in order to construct these tunnel segments. That devastation will take a generation to overcome in terms of replanting trees and attempting to bring that soil back to arable farming conditions. So the environmental impact of this tunnel is significantly worse than the now scrapped bridge project would have been.
Furthermore, Councillor Day justified splitting the Massey Tunnel 2 into multiple phases, as she feels it will make the construction more feasible, comparing to the North Shore Wastewater Treatment Plant, which ballooned from $700 million to $4 billion, rejected your suggestion of an independent review. The former BC Liberal Premier Clark should have built another tunnel in the first place, which would have been closer to 4.15 instead of 8.5 billion, and added additional concerns of the Massey Bridge, being originally a three-level high interchange for bus exchanges, taking an elevator between levels in the middle of Highway 99, something out of LA. In jiving with the Steepson Interchange, which was rebuilt last year, along with the foundations of liquefiable silt and piles of 100 meters deep, while the new tunnel sinks evenly with the riverbed without causing environmental disaster. Counter.
Yeah, well, once again, so much there. That's incorrect. I mean, we're let's remember what we're doing here. We're trying to build a crossing, not just for the 100,000 commuters, but to connect the entire country, our national trade, coming through Highway 99 to YVR Airport, to Delta Port, Western Canada's largest container port terminal that's due for expansion, the U.S. Blaine border crossing. There is serious commerce, you know, billions of dollars of trade going back and forth on this bridge every single year, connecting Canada to the world. And to oppose a bridge because you're concerned about shading or you're concerned about height, that is a deeply unserious way to govern. That is not the way that we get nation-building projects done. People need to move from A to B. People have missed doctor's appointments, time with family, office meetings for 10 years going through this process because of ridiculous concerns like shading and height and silt, which again is completely incorrect. That's not the way you make multi-billion dollar decisions. With regards to the cost would have been far below $4.15 billion. This bridge would have been completed at under $3 billion. I think $2.7 billion was the winning bid, which would have completed not just a 10-lane bridge, but interchange and overpass upgrades from Richmond all the way to White Rock along the Highway 99 corridor. Instead, for $8.5 billion, we get a tunnel that is two lanes smaller than the bridge would have been, and no additional overpasses. The Steveston overpass that you referenced was hived off from the Massey Tunnel project and completed at a separate separate project with a separate budget. Billions of dollars in waste. Billions of dollars that could have gone towards things like investing in hospitals, investing in schools and other needed infrastructure across BC, wasted on this tunnel for petty partisan political purposes.
So explain more about liquefiable silt concern being incorrect.
Well, again, we've got the studies. I've got binders full of studies in my office at City Hall from all of the reviews that were done on the bridge crossing in 2013 when it was announced by former Premier Christy Clark, all of the consultation that was done with the farming community, with emergency responders, with geotechnical engineers. This project wasn't some pie-in-the-sky hypothetical situation. It was happening. It was getting built. The province of British Columbia would not have spent $100 million on a project that was unbuildable if any of these concerns about liquefaction were correct. The engineers had sorted a solution. It's funny, every other crossing along the Fraser River, whether it's the Alex Fraser Bridge or the Patello Bridge or the Golden Ears Bridge, every other crossing is a bridge. This is the only example of a submerged tube tunnel in the region. We don't build submerged tube tunnels in Canada, which is why there have been cost escalations. It's a highly complex process. Experts and equipment has had to be brought in from Europe in order to complete this project. It's no wonder. If you look back on my interviews from 8 years ago, when the NDP canceled the bridge project in the first place, I said back then, there is no way this project will be completed on time and on budget. And that's exactly what happened. And one more thing on the environment. It's important to remember, Steve, that this tunnel still does not have an environmental assessment certificate. The province cannot begin substantial construction on any of these tunnel segments until that EA certificate is achieved. They said it would be done in 2024. Then they said it would be done in 2025. Then they said it would be done in 2026. Well, we're still waiting, and there's still no environmental assessment certificate because the Environmental Assessment Office knows this project is going to be an unmitigated disaster.
Which brings me to my next question. If the environmental review of the Massey Tunnel 2 gets rejected with you as the mayor, how will the Delta City Council counter Richmond's desire for the Massey Tunnel 2?
Ultimately, this is a provincial piece of infrastructure, and it's the province's job to get it done. I actually think the province needs to spend less time listening to mayors who think that they're engineers and more time getting on with their own projects. So we will continue, when I am mayor, to advocate for a Massey Tunnel crossing that gets done as quickly as possible and for the lowest possible cost. It's up to the province to determine how to do that, but so far they are failing. They're failing our residents, and they're failing commuters and business owners across the region.
One more question about the technicalities. How will the resurrected Massey Bridge jibe with the Steepson Interchange?
Well, this is why I have called for an independent third-party review. Taxpayers deserve the facts. We deserve to know exactly how much the Massey Tunnel will end up costing us. I don't think it's going to end at $8.5 billion. There's no way. And we need to know what the cost would be to revert back to a bridge project, which would include likely the replacement or the modification of the Steepson Interchange. I would hazard it would probably come in billions of dollars cheaper and probably quicker. But again, let's not take my word for it. Let's get an expert opinion. But instead, it has been very difficult. This government has been very opaque and untransparent. They released a budget in February that still had the George Massey Tunnel crossing at $4 billion for capital expenses. We knew back then there was no way this project was going to come in at $4 billion. And what do we find out months later? That the project cost has ballooned to over double the cost at $8.5, with probably more escalations to come. And what a shame. The $3 billion federal contribution, that would have paid for the entire bridge project that should have been completed 3 years ago. Instead, billions of money, your money and my money, taxpayer money in Ottawa, going to bail out the province for a very bad political decision.
I'll just make one more comment on the technicalities of the Massey Bridge if it ever gets brought back. Along with Steepson Interchange, I would imagine the Ladner Interchange will have to be accommodated as well.
As it should, and what a shame for our community. You know, that is called the Highway 17A interchange connecting Ladner to the Highway 99 and the Massey Tunnel. That interchange replacement project was scrapped at the same time that the bridge project was scrapped. Residents in my community deserve a new modern interchange. You drive over that thing today, it is a mess. It's a disaster with white cones that have been put up to delineate traffic. It's very confusing for residents trying to either get into Ladner or into the Tilbury industrial area. Residents using that interchange often inadvertently take the wrong exit and end up going back through the tunnel that they just came through, sitting in traffic a double time to get back. So residents in South Delta deserve the replacement interchange on Highway 17A. And the other thing, Steve, that we haven't discussed is they also deserved the much needed and long promised second exit out of Ladner, which was supposed to be built on River Road, reconnecting River Road and allowing for that second exit to get onto the highway. Both of those interchanges should have been included in this project, and it's an absolute shame that they are not.
Finally, the South Delta MLA, Ian Paton, resigned from the BC Conservative Party this Monday, joining Peter Miliband. But Rosalind Burr from Prince George resigned yesterday, and Teresa Watt left today, as four MLAs have left the BC Conservative Party. How will these defections impact the Massey Tunnel replacement construction?
Well, I don't know. I can't tell you much about the state of the BC Conservative Party, but what I can tell you is that Ian Paton, as our local MLA in Delta South, is the gold standard for integrity, a man of honor, a man who has a very high ethical standard. So I listen very carefully when he speaks. And Ian has been a huge champion since day one for the Massey bridge replacement, and he has been one of the strongest critics of the province when it comes to their failures on this boondoggle of a tunnel. I'd expect that advocacy will continue in his new role as an independent MLA representing Delta South.
Thank you for this very informative session. One of rare interviews that I had to do a counterpoint, if not the first one. This interview will be posted online sometime this week, and it will air on CJSF 90.1 FM this Sunday.
Well, thank you again. Thank you so much for the opportunity. And yes, please do share it with me, and I'd love to share it with my networks as well.
Okay. Thank you, and stay safe.
Excellent. You too. Thanks, Steve.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
That was my interview with Dylan Kruger, a staunch supporter for the Massey Bridge, who was wanting to become the next Delta mayor to unseat George Harvey. Regarding the BC Conservatives who support the Massey Bridge, there have been two more defections, making it six: Brennan Day and Bruce Bannman. Brennan Day, I believe he left on August 26th, on the same day of this interview, and Bruce Bannman left on August 27th. Now I'd like to talk about the Surrey police transition, the largest police transition in Canadian history at this time. On August 27th, the SPS announced that it had removed 50 weapons last month in the four districts where it provides frontline policing: Wally, where the SFU Surrey campus resides; Newton; Cloverdale; and South Surrey. On August 28th, the SPS announced that the agreement between its board and union had been renewed, a four-year term between January 1st, 2025 and December 31st, 2028. The new agreement includes general wage increases similar to other police departments in 2025-2026, followed by general increases of 4.25% for 2027 and 4% for 2028. The compensation agreement lines up with the SPS overall costing mandate equal to the VPD, which had its wages and benefits negotiated last fall. With the new agreement between the SPB and SPU, the SPS wages will increase by $14.282 million, a 13% increase, which was included in the 2026 operating budget, according to joint press releases from the SPB and SPS. On August 28th, the SPS finished up its second youth annual youth basketball camp, where kids connected with SPS officers and interim chief Todd Matsumoto also dropped by. Thank you for listening to episode 35 of the Steve Chong Show, part of Open Mic on CJSF 90.1 FM, the campus community radio station for Simon Fraser University. I'm your host, Steve Chong. Thank you for listening through some massive technical difficulties, as my script on computer one was frozen, along with the one right above it, as there are two computers one, along with two computers two, where computers one only got back to its order, returned to normal during my interview with Dylan Kruger. Coming up at 11, it's Julian Taylor's Jukebox.
If you're a regular listener of this show or other shows on CJSF, we'd love to hear from you. Tell us about what you like and why you like it, as well as ways we can improve our programming. To leave comments, please email cjsfprog@sfu.ca or call 778-782-4423. This information can also be found on our website at www.cjsf.ca.